Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here on Medical Frontiers, here with Rob Pratt. Another nice day in the Berg.
A beautiful day, so enjoy it, because by the time Wednesday night this time rolls around, it's going to turn back into winter.
Are we going to have snow?
Slight dusting, but the temperatures are going to be in the upper 20s. So this upper 40s, low 50s stuff is going to last for the next couple of days through Wednesday, mid-afternoon.
Okay, so enjoy it while it's here, right?
Absolutely. Okay.
Medical Frontiers tonight, we're going to be talking about men's health with a special emphasis on urologic problems, and we have a special guest in our studio this evening. He is no stranger to Medical Frontiers. He has been here before, and that is none other than Dr. Herman Baga.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Okay. It's great having you. And men's health, and especially from a urologic standpoint, I mean, you see men and women. But, you know, as our urogenital systems are a little different, being men versus women, and primarily the prostate, women don't have one of those, but every man does, right?
Certainly does, yeah.
And we can have problems with our prostate and some other things that happen in our urogenital system. But tell us a little bit about the type of men you see in your practice that affects their general health from a urologic standpoint.
Sure. So I see a wide variety of patients, like you mentioned. A lot of men specifically come to my men's health center for certain high-impact urology conditions. So, for example, erectile dysfunction, testosterone insufficiency, often prostate cancer screening or urinary issues, like you mentioned. And so these are things that we're able to help them out with. But, you know, I'd like to put a nice emphasis on overall wellness. For example, erectile dysfunction. We were just chatting earlier, the number one cause, cardiovascular disease. Second most common cause, diabetes. So these are very common medical problems that we like to explore when we're trying to figure out, sure, I'll help you with your erections, but why are you having these and how can we help you improve those and improve your overall wellness?
Okay, how often is it a cardiovascular problem or diabetes in a man who comes into the men's health clinic with difficulty getting an erection?
I'd say the vast majority, there's a large component. You know, these things are often multifactorial, meaning there's more than one. You can't always just say just one thing. But by far and large, the most common is cardiovascular disease, and well over half of my patients have some sort of issue. Maybe it'd be underlying high blood pressure, you know, hyperlipidemia, all these sorts of things can be affecting their erections. And those with diabetes, they also have cardiovascular dysfunction. So it's often a double hit for these individuals. So we make sure that those primary issues are being taken care of while we treat their erectile function.
And they can also have a problem with their kidneys, secondary to cardiovascular problems and
or diabetes.
Also diabetes.
Absolutely. You know? So we keep an eye on all.
And the kidneys are very important as far as a urogenital system, right?
You bet. Absolutely. They're very important to the body. And as a urologist, I often see kidney stones.
Right.
It's a very common issue that we run into for men.
Is that partially a diet thing, doctor, kidney stones?
Yeah. It's estimated that for over 80% of men or women who have kidney stones, it's associated to diet. And I'll tell you, the top three ways to prevent kidney stones are, number one, drink a lot of fluids.
Yep.
You want to make at least 2.5 liters of urine a day, which is obviously you're not sitting around with a measuring cup, but you think of that as how much intake you should take as well. Number two is a very, very, very low salt diet. So those things we love in Pittsburgh, those pretzels, those chips, all that kind of stuff, you got to watch out for the deli meats, the canned foods. And number three is actually meat. Doesn't mean you have to be vegetarian, but a high meat diet will actually create your make your urine quite acidic, and that can promote stone formation as well. So we usually recommend that, and if you're still having stones beyond that, I can do what's called a metabolic stone workup. We do urine and blood tests to see if there's other underlying causes for stone disease.
Do you treat some people with stones with that ultrasonic blaster?
Yeah, the technology has evolved somewhat. At some point, it used to be a bathtub with, you know, like a radar machine on the outside. That's what it looked like, essentially. So something interesting. But that is a non-invasive way to bust up the stones and break them into small pieces. But then you can imagine you break it into small pieces, you are responsible for passing those fragments on your own.
Right.
So if you have a larger stone where you're worried the fragments are just going to get larger and they get lodged on the way out, you can do what's called ureteroscopy, which is a tiny camera. It's very interesting technology. You pass it through the urethra, so the natural holes in the body without any cuts, take it up to the stone, and then break it with a tiny laser, and then actually with a small basket, grab all the little pieces out. So you can clean it out for people so they don't have to experience all the pain of passing the stone.
What's the size of the ureter?
The ureter, the size of it itself is different than what it can be because it can expand. So the ureter in its natural state is probably somewhere around less than what we use a formation called French, about 10 French or so. However, it can expand quite a bit, and I'll tell you that's for sure when I've seen stone lodged in there.
And that's a good thing that it can expand because of the larger stone.
Exactly.
It needs to expand. Exactly. Would it be about the size of, the filler, the ink in a ballpoint pen?
That's a good way to put it. I often tell people like a coffee stirrer in some ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it can, depending on people's anatomy, can vary a little bit.
Yeah. We had a professor in medical school. He was a professor in physiology, and he had a staghorn calculus.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Tell us what that is.
So a staghorn calculus, it's a namesake of the antlers, you know, which looks like a staghorn. And so this is a stone that is so large that it fills the entire inside of the kidney, or at least part of the kidney, and just is lodged in there and continues to grow and creates a large calcification or stone within the kidney itself.
And they can be painful.
They can be quite painful, and more than even painful, because sometimes your body gets used to things, right?
Yeah.
Even more so is they can be dangerous because they're blocking the flow of urine, and that causes a backup of urine into the kidney, and the kidney's a pump. So if you block the outflow to a pump, it can overheat. The kidney can overheat too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you need to go in there and remove that. Now, in those cases, we sometimes have more aggressive surgical techniques where you have to go through your back and things like that to remove that stone.
Yeah, we wondered why he was so mean, and then we found that he had a staghorn calculus. Okay.
He had an excuse, I guess.
All right. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about men's health tonight. Give us a call, and you can ask questions of Dr. Herman Bhagya. And you can do that by calling 866-391-1020. We'll be back after the break. Okay, we are back on Medical Frontiers talking about men's health this evening with Dr. Herman Bhagya. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. We were just talking about President Trump in India and so on. And as far as men's health is concerned, and especially from a urologic standpoint, are a lot of differences from country to country? Or is, you know, Does India have a lot of problems that you see here in the United States, or is it different?
So, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, you're bringing that, they can't tell on the radio, I'm of Indian descent as well, so.
Oh, are you? Hey, Rob, East India.
A lot of those problems are ubiquitous. For example, the end result for what they see me for. So, for example, they see me for erectile dysfunction, testosterone deficiency. I also specialize in urethral stricture disease, genitourinary reconstruction. But the way that it develops can vary depending on your nationality. So, for example, Indians, you brought up Indians, we have a high propensity for cardiovascular disease in the United States.
Really?
Much higher. In fact, there are multiple specific institutes at the Mayo Clinic, for example, that is a South Asian cardiovascular institute. Because men, specifically men, who come from Indian descent and then come to the United States, they have a much higher risk of cardiovascular disease, you know, sometimes over tenfold compared to being in their home and home country. So I think it's the way genetic interplays with an entirely new environment, and that occurs not only with, you know, with Indians, but many other different descents. And then, of course, if you're diagnosed with a cardiovascular disease, like we discussed, you can have more urologic problems, whether it be, you know, many of the things we talked about.
In India, what is the percentage of people who primarily have a vegetarian diet?
It's a very large proportion. I don't know specifically, to be honest, but I believe it's above 60 to 70% in that it's the majority.
But they're really they have as much cardiovascular disease as we do here in the Western culture.
When they're in there, but when they approach the, this is the very interesting thing, and why all these institutes are coming up, as they come from their home countries to the United States, that risk increases. As opposed to being at home.
Right.
So it has something to do with, there has to be a difference in the diet, whether it be a more meat-based diet, or frankly, the ingredients are different. You know, there's more breads, there's different types of fats that they're having, things like that.
So, yeah. Okay, why don't we go to our phone lines, and let's go to Joe in Dorseyville as our first caller. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, doctor. Thank you. This is so appropriate, because I've had diabetes for 50 years. And my PCP now, it's a new PCP. He's demanding I see a nephrologist.
Okay.
And I'm seeing one on Thursday now. I waited about 2 months to get an appointment.
Okay. And do you have some kidney symptoms? Is that why she's sending you to a nephrologist?
No. I've always, you know, passed some protein in my urine. But the last test showed that... You know, my doctor won't tell me what my what number it is, but what is a dangerous number for how much protein is being passed in the urine?
Okay, Dr. Bhagia, how about that?
So, you know, when protein is passed in the urine, that can be an indication of kidney damage. Your kidney shouldn't usually be leaking protein. It should be able to hold on to it, for lack of a better way to put it. So if it's passing that, that means there's some level of damage. Now, the amount of protein, sure, that's one marker, but most important is actually a value called creatinine, or GFR, which is glomerular filtration rate. Filtration is important because that's what the kidney does. It filters the blood and makes sure that it cleans it out and gets rid of all the toxins. So this number, if you might have it or not, I'm not sure, it kind of indicates how well the kidney is functioning overall. And that's what we care about, right? How well is the kidney filtering the blood?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a good idea that that he be seen by a nephrologist.
And a nephrologist can be very helpful. They can give you dietary changes. You know, sometimes they'll recommend different types of diets to improve that. They'll watch things for high blood pressure, which in addition to the diabetes can affect your kidney function. Sometimes they can even put you on medications, some called ACE inhibitors, for example, that can reduce pressure on the kidneys. And that way there'll be less pressure on there and reduce damage moving forward.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Joe. We appreciate it. Let's go to another Joe in Butler. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question. Like, when I have sex and I have an erection, and it feels like, you know, my semen's coming out, but it doesn't. Why?
Okay, how about that, Dr. Bhagia?
So, you know, for a lot of men, we have what you're describing sounds most likely what's called retrograde ejaculation. I can't say for sure because I'm not examining you, obviously, but that's the most common thing that's going on. So what happens there is you feels like the ejaculate is going to come out, but it actually goes in the other direction. So instead of coming out, it goes backwards into the bladder. Now, you pee it out later. It doesn't cause infections. It's really not an issue unless you're trying to have more children, of course. But in most cases, it's not dangerous. Now, the reason it happens is usually because of the prostate. The prostate is a gland that wraps around the urethra, which is the tube that you pee out of and the tube that urine and semen comes out of. And when it presses on that area, it kind of creates almost like a kink in the pipe so that the semen bounces backwards into the bladder instead.
That's something that should be checked out or not?
If it's bothering him. It shouldn't be dangerous in and of itself. So it's nothing you need to worry about or stay up about. But if it's something that's bothersome to you, sometimes we do have treatment options to help you out with that.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Gary in Greensburg. Good evening, Gary.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I had a question. I was diagnosed a few years ago with a hydrocele, but then a few years later it was re-diagnosed as a spermatocele. Mm. And I went to two different urologists with the expectation that they would be able to perform aspiration with sclerotherapy.
Sure.
And both of them discouraged me from that. The first one said that he doesn't do it at all. The second one said, I would do it, but let's face it, it's not going to work. And I'm wondering what your opinion is on that.
Okay, and also, Dr. Bhagia, tell us the difference between a hydrocele and a spermatocele.
Sure. So a hydrocele, and it's a very important distinction, a hydrocele is a fluid collection around one of the testes. So think of the testes almost sitting like in a little pillowcase before it sits in the scrotum. So in between the pillow and the pillowcase, if there's a lot of fluid that builds up, that's called a hydrocele. That can happen maybe due to an old infection or trauma. You were hit, you were hurt, and a lot of fluid was produced and it got trapped in that location. A spermatocele, on the other hand, is a small cyst that's usually made in what's called the epididymis. That's outside of the testis. There's a fine network of tubes over there, and if one of them gets blocked and backed up with sperm, it can create a small cyst in that location. Both of them are not cancerous, but there are treatment options if they're bothersome or painful.
Okay, and he's been advised of a couple of things there. What is your approach?
So if it's a hydrocele, there is an option for aspiration and sclerosis. This is something that I do. I'll tell you, the success rates are not quite as high as the gold standard surgical approach. However, it's a very quick procedure. It takes 5 to 10 minutes, and that estimates success rates are about 50%. So you are rolling the dice a little bit, but it's a quick procedure. If that doesn't work, then you can move forward to a formal repair, which is a hydrocelectomy, a little bit longer, maybe about a 45-minute procedure in the OR. You go home the same day, but much higher success rates, 85 to 90% plus.
Okay, how about a spermatocele?
So a spermatocele, we generally do leave alone. If it's very painful, we can go in and surgically remove it. For that, there is no room for aspiration and sclerosis, mainly because you generally can't target something so small. And the sclerotic agents aren't actually made for that area. And personally, I worry that they would cause chronic pain in the area. So I don't put those in the epididymis.
Okay, let's go to Beverly in Pittsburgh. Beverly?
Hello?
Hello, Beverly. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to ask the doctor something about my husband,
okay,
which is 81 years old. He has a stagnant kidney stone in his left kidney. He's had for 9 years. We went to the doctors every year to get x-rays and to see if this stone is growing or not. Now they want to go in and take this blast this kidney stone out. What are his functions now? He had kidney function done. The left kidney is 25%.
Okay. Okay, Beverly, what we're going to do is we need to take a real hard break here. If you would just hang on the phone, we'll be back to you after the break, and we'll talk about your husband's kidney stone. Okay, we'll be back. Okay, we're back on Medical Frontiers, and Beverly, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Bhagia, how about Beverly's husband's kidney stone? It's been recommended now for this long-standing stone that he has something done about it.
So, he has a staghorn stone in his left kidney.
So it's one of those staghorns we were talking about earlier, which is, of course, a very large stone that usually fills up the entirety of the kidney. You know, a few things are very important when deciding to remove a stone or not. Number one, is it causing pain or not causing pain? Number two, is it causing any sort of other complications such as decline in kidney function? And you had mentioned that some imaging had been done to kind of get a sense of how much function that kidney has. So, for example, if that kidney does not have a whole lot of function, we usually say less than 15 to 20% is considered a low function.
It's 25.
So it's a little right above that kind of threshold. You also have to think about how healthy the other kidney is. If the other kidney is very healthy, then maybe you don't have to be as aggressive on that left side. But if that kidney is struggling, or if you have other comorbid conditions such as diabetes, high blood pressure that could compromise kidney function in the future, you may want to be more aggressive about that side. Now, when it comes to removing that stone, depending on the size, there are a few different ways to do it. A shock wave is usually not very effective for a stone that's anything larger than 2 centimeters in size. So if it's a very large stone, which I get worried about with a staghorn, often a person has to be aggressive and surgically remove it by going through the back. So, you know, and he's 81 years of age?
Yes.
So, you know, that's something you really have to consider, is that can be a little bit painful, right? And so you have to decide whether it's worth it to be that aggressive. Or if the other kidney's functioning well enough and he's not bothered, sometimes there's even room to leave well enough alone. So, you know.
Well, yeah, the right kidney is 75%. He is not having any pain whatsoever. He does have high blood pressure.
Mm, okay.
So we decided not to do anything. Now, if this left kidney shuts down, he's still all right with the right kidney. Is that correct?
For most people, and you know, I'm sure you've seen on TV shows, movies, et cetera, people even sometimes donate a kidney, right? And they do just fine with one. So mm-hmm. many people, as long as they take good care of that remaining kidney, and of course would have to review your labs to be sure, but you know, have a good diet, keep that blood pressure under control, avoid high blood sugars, things like that that could damage that remaining kidney, they'll do well. Now, you can't ignore that stone on the left side completely.
No, we're going to keep on going back to the doctors every year. And
absolutely.
Getting the x-rays done and the KUB to see if it's grown or anything. And it hasn't really grown in the last 9 years.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that's pretty smart. Keep an eye on it with the x-rays, ultrasounds, get urine tests done to make sure there's no signs of infection, get those kidney function tests done to make sure things are maintained, and it's mm-hmm. it'll be just fine.
Yeah, he really didn't want to go in and get this done because they said they would have to go into the back.
Yeah.
And he doesn't tolerate surgery too well.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that.
Okay, Beverly, was that helpful with your conversation
yes,
here with Dr. Boggs?
Very much. Thank you for your show. We
okay.
listen to it every Monday.
Okay.
Thanks
for holding on for the call. Okay, let's go to Brian in Shadyside. Brian?
Yeah,
good evening.
Hi.
Good evening.
My dad's in his mid-90s, and he can't get any sleep at night because he's always running to the bathroom. He gets about an hour and 20 minutes of sleep. Now, he tried this one supplement that was in the back of, like, one of these tabloid magazines. That increased it to an hour and 50 minutes, but it was kind of expensive. It was $75 for 60 days. So is there anything else he can do? He's too old for surgery, right?
Well, I don't know whether you're ever too old for surgery, but Dr. Baggia, how about that? Frequent passing his urine at night, you know, and he's not getting any sleep.
So there's several reasons for that. For men, one of the common reasons is your prostate. So as we age, and all men, as we age, our prostate gets bigger. The prostate is a gland that wraps around the urethra, which is the tube that you pee out of like a donut. And as you get older, it kind of squashes down on that tube. And so it puts a lot of back pressure on that bladder. The bladder is a pump. The bladder starts to overheat a little bit, get irritated, and is always trying to get urine out. It's kind of squeezing uncontrollably. So there are a few things you can do. Number one, you can target that prostate with specialized medications. I certainly wouldn't go to a tabloid and spend that much money for the medication. We've got plenty of generic medications, et cetera, that are very affordable that can target the prostate. If you're looking for natural therapies, saw palmetto is not a bad idea as well, and that's often available GNC.
That.
Beyond that, then you got to target the bladder, right? The bladder is overactive, and what can we do to kind of calm down this overheated pump? A few things you can do. You can watch your diet. So there's certain irritative fluids, things that are carbonated, sodas, coffees, teas, even decaffeinated beverages, a lot of these sports drinks, artificial sugars, alcohol, these are all very irritating to the bladder. Very spicy foods, very acidic foods, heavily tomato-based diets, I've heard as well, are very irritating to the bladder. Things like that you can do. Also reduce fluid intake at night. And a nice thing I also recommend doing is kicking your feet up earlier in the day, because what happens is the fluid kind of pools in your legs during the course of the day, and then when you finally lay down for bed at night, all that fluid gets processed in your body and gets turned into urine. So if you kick your feet up earlier in the day and process that fluid earlier, it'll get processed during the waking hours rather than when you're sleeping.
Yeah, he eats at 4:30. He eats dinner at 4:30 because he has that GERD. And my question is, can he do those exercises with his urethra, what they call them, Kegel or Kugel exercises?
So I'm glad you brought that up. The Kegels would actually unfortunately worsen things for him, because the Kegels are designed to increased muscle tone. So people who have leakage of urine because of like a leaky faucet, a drip, 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 or the sphincter isn't working, you do a Kegel. But for him, if you strengthen the muscles, it's only going to make a more irritated muscle stronger. And so the Kegels are not a good idea for him. But there are the opposite. We can use bladder relaxants even. So those are things we can think about.
His doctor doesn't think his heart's strong enough for surgery.
I don't know if surgery's the answer, even if his heart was strong enough. I usually like to try some medications first, and if those don't work, that's the only time we think of it, kind of as a last resort.
Okay,
Brian?
Great.
Okay.
Thank you
very much for the call. Let's go to Brad in Clarion. Brad, good evening.
Yeah,
do you have a question?
My urologist, I don't have any kidney stone problem myself. But I have a nephew that does. And I asked my neurologist about the kidney stones. He said if you drink a lot of soda pop, he said that'll cause kidney stones. Is that right?
Dr. Baggett, what about that? Soda cause kidney stones?
It actually can encourage it in a few different ways. Number one, many soda pops are caffeinated, which can dehydrate a person. Also, some of the additives within some of these soda pops, particularly darker colas, can also encourage kidney stone formation. So there's definitely legitimacy to that.
Okay, Brad, thanks so much for the call. Okay, this is Medical Frontiers. We need to take a break. We'll be back after the break. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. Okay, we are back on Medical Frontiers for our last segment for this evening, and we're talking about men's health with a special emphasis on urology, and we have Dr. Herman Baga here, and give us a call at 866-391-1020. Let's go to Helen in Forest Hills. Good evening, Helen.
Hi. A friend of mine has a, I think it's high creatinine level and a low EGFRA.
Okay.
But the doctor just tells him that it's just mildly abnormal. I think is it EGFRA? It's supposed to be 60. I think his is like 50-some.
Okay.
And the doctor said it's from taking the high blood pressure medication.
All right. Dr. Baga, how about that?
So I would take some comfort in the fact that I agree that it's not terrible. So, you know, an EGFR should be above 60 under most cases, but having in the 50s is not bad either. The kidney should be plenty healthy enough to be filtering out his blood properly. When there's some sort of damage to the kidney, it can happen for a few reasons. As a urologist, sometimes I see it with kidney stones. The urine gets backed up and the kidney gets backed up, and I can just remove the stone, and then after you remove that blockage, the kidney function comes back. But sometimes there are going to be medical reasons why that kidney's not functioning quite as well. And one of the most common ones is high blood pressure. Now, I don't think it's because the high blood pressure medicine itself. It's probably more likely due to the high blood pressure. What happens with high blood pressure is you've got really tiny blood vessels throughout the kidney, and as they get a lot of pressure, that puts a lot of pressure on the kidney itself, which can cause some damage. So remaining on that high blood pressure medicine actually would be very important for him. Or her, I missed that part, to kind of maintain a low pressure environment and help the kidney. Now, there's certain blood pressure medicines that are better than others, and that's where a nephrologist can really come in and decide on the best one to use.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not sure what he does have high blood pressure. I do know that.
And the
doctor hasn't recommended going to a kidney specialist, and I told him maybe that's what he should do.
It kind of depends on comfort levels. A lot of primary care doctors are very comfortable managing this, and especially with a mild dysfunction, it probably is reasonable. But I'd watch it very closely, and if, God forbid, it does get worse and requires more expertise, that would be a good reason to kind of talk to other folks as well.
Is his blood pressure regulated better with the medication he's taking? Is his blood pressure down?
Well, I think he's on Losartan and Norvasc.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to be working.
Well,
it's
sometimes
still high.
Yeah. How long has he been on that?
Couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not the PCP is managing it, and she is not from she's from UPMC.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe you ought to see another PCP.
Well, if you know, if you wanted another opinion, that can be made with an appointment 412 doctors on the phone or ahan.org on the computer. Can be an appointment can be had online. So, because
should he go to a kidney specialist or another PCP for an opinion?
Well, I think that's kind of hard to say, right, Dr. Paga? I think maybe another opinion, either way, either another PCP or a nephrologist.
Probably what I would do is, I would have him ask his PCP what they think. Do they think it's a good idea to see a nephrologist? And many times they'll say,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, he has asked her, because when he gets it taken at other doctors' offices, they keep telling him his pressure's high. And she keeps saying, well, it's not that high. But he'll go somewhere else, and he'll take it himself, and it'll be like 160, the top number,
mm-hmm.
if he goes to any other doctor.
Okay, well, it sounds like everyone would be more comfortable if you did get another opinion, okay? Okay, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Don in Bellevue. Good evening, Don.
Yes, I have been misdiagnosed with some gallstones. 73 years old. I've had a couple of kidney stones, and I had a GI where it was diagnosed, and but yet the med for the GI supposedly, I guess it's supposed to. I don't know if it's going to. I was told I was to be on the rest of my life, you know. But then when I have some side effects, I get itchy skin everywhere. And they just told me, well, not the doctor. The nurse said, well, just stop taking it. But I said, the doctor's prescribed it to me to take it the rest of my life. It's you're so dull, you know. And I have no problem with the itchy skin. I've been living with it for a couple months now. And I was just wondering if there's anything else I can do to dissolve those gallstones, if I ever can, or am I just, they're there for the rest of my life?
Well, it's sort of outside Dr. Vargas' area. He takes care of kidney stones. But is there any relationship with a person developing gallstones and kidney stones? Is that not really?
Not particularly. I haven't seen a connection between those. Potentially maybe diet and a healthy diet, maybe a high-fat diet can promote gallstones. And sometimes those are associated with also, you know, kidney stones from that perspective. But there isn't much connection otherwise.
It probably would be best to see a gastroenterologist about those gallstones. And sometimes they can cause problems. Sometimes you just live with them and they don't cause any problems. So probably be best to have that checked out, though, Dawn. Okay, thanks so much for the call. This is Medical Frontiers. It's amazing. The hour is almost gone. What do you have? A few words of wisdom, let's say primarily for men, to stay healthy and not have some of the problems that we see as we age. A few
You know, I'll tell you, so many of the problems I see are related to cardiovascular disease, erectile dysfunction. I see issues with, low testosterone. I see issues with Peyronie's disease, which is another disorder, sometimes with blood flow issues. And, you know, I've seen there's so much merit to just a good heart healthy diet. It starts at the basics. And if you can keep a nice, low-fat, high fiber kind of diet, a good amount of exercise, just 20 minutes a day, three times a week, where you get that heart rate up to your target heart rate, that can just work wonders. I've had people on erectile dysfunction meds, give them this advice, they do it for a while, and then they're off the meds. So I've seen it happen.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Baga, for being our guest tonight. And that's a good segue into next week. Guess what we're going to be talking about next week? Kidney disease. All right, Medical Frontiers, 1 week from this evening, okay, on March 2nd, 2020. Good night.